Good morning and welcome to the Mesa City Council study session for February the 18th. All members are here and accounted for. I do need to apologize in advance. I am attending a conference of mayors meeting out of state, and so I'll be leaving in about a half an hour, and so the vice mayor will conduct the meeting from that point on. The first item on our agenda is to review our agenda for our Monday council meeting on the 22nd of February. So council, let's please take a look at that. First few items are just getting us started, and item three are various liquor license applications. Yeah. Mr. Richens.
I just wanted to express appreciation to our folks that handle liquor license stuff. In the reports, it's explaining more clearly what each license does as you know, we go through that learning curve. So I just wanted to express appreciation. It's the last line on the report, if you guys missed it, but it explains more fully what that license allows them to do, and I think that's really helpful. Thank you.
See a lot of good places to eat on here. The Crab Shack, I know, is a favorite of people in this room. Item four is take action on various contracts. I know that Mr. Brady's at item 4F that's been removed from the agenda. The applicant has withdrawn 4F, so feel free to strike that from your agenda. Item five are various resolutions. And six, take action on resolutions relating to the sale of property. Seven is setting a hearing for zoning ordinances. Mr. Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm not going to ask that it be taken off for introduction, but 7B, when it comes time for action, that's a freeway landmark monument sign. I will ask that that be taken off the consent agenda. I've had a longstanding concern about freeway landmark monument signs in terms of their effectiveness, again, depending on location and need. And I think the only one I've voted for before after a lot of persuasion was the one right by Fiesta Mall. And we certainly didn't see any measurable impact by approving that sign several years ago in terms of sales at the mall. So that's just a concern of mine in terms of kind of visual pollution along a freeway. Today, with the different apps that we have, it's pretty easy to find where you need to go. So it's no reflection on that center or anything like that, but it's just a more philosophical thing for me. But stay on consent for introduction, but when we have the hearing on it, I will ask it to take off. Thanks.
Okay, understood. Yes, Mr. Finter.
Also along those lines, I have some concerns also, and it might take me a minute or two to get this out. So, one, I think freeway monument signs should be reserved for pretty special uses, AT steel, some of those destination kind of uses that I think would be appropriate. But what's happened here, this intersection is a happening place now. We've had Mark Taylor project come in, $50 million. They're beginning to get that through, and we'll build an amazing high-end housing there. Also, the front pad in front of this Mark Taylor looks like it's being designated for a hotel site. And also, as part of this complex, the city's requiring a new access road that will service come into Banner Gateway, also Anderson Cancer Clinic. And there's a proposal for future expansion of the Anderson, what's the property?
MD Anderson,
thank you, the MD Anderson Cancer Center. That'll be on the Mesa side of things. And so I worry a little bit that when we do the freeway monument signs, it kind of is somebody staking out that intersection. And there's a lot of really great things happening in that area. And so it's gotten me to take pause. I've had no contact from anybody on this, which kind of worries me that somehow everybody thinks this is just what we do now. So that would be my concerns, and I'm sure we'll maybe hear back from folks. But I think there's a lot of really good things happening. That area between 60 and Baseline has become the sweet spot all the way down when you look at what's happening at Val Vista, Greenfield, other places. So I would just have some concerns there.
Thank you. Sounds like likely stay on consent for Monday, but when it's time for the hearing, there'll be some good discussion on that topic. Okay, agenda item 8 is receiving public comment and taking action on a an ordinance. And then we do have items off the consent agenda. 9A is a zoning case that I think we're all very familiar with. And 9B is a resolution authorizing the city manager to enter into an agreement with, it's related to the zoning case. So, any other discussion, members of the council, about our agenda for Monday? If not, we'll move on. The next item is to hear a presentation and discuss proposed bond refundings and defeasance and bond program update. It's always good to pay off bonds. It's good to see you. Mike Kennington and Candace Strano.
Good morning. Mayor and council members.
Financial geniuses. Thank you.
We're excited to be here today. As many of you guys know, the stock market has experienced some drop in value over the last several months. And while that may be a hit to your stock portfolio, it's created a favorable market for debt issuers such as the City of Mesa. So today we'd like to review some of those opportunities. We'd like to review the four resolutions that are currently on the Monday's agenda for council members' consideration. We'd also like to review the timeline if council members approve the resolutions, and finally the funding plan for the debt service. So the first slide, we'd like to discuss the general obligation bond related items. I'd like to first direct everybody's attention to the graph on the right. This line on the right represents our debt service for general obligation bonds that we have outstanding. And I'd like to emphasize the spike in 17-18. As you can see, that's about a $23 million jump in debt service payments that we would have to make currently. And so that spike was generated because of a 2004 refunding that happened. And, you know, ever since I've been here, we've targeted that to restructure that debt. But per IRS guidelines, we have to restructure that with a taxable debt because you can only refund a tax-exempt bond once. And so that's why we would have to do that in a taxable fashion. Now, the other item we've identified is $20 million worth of bonds that would be savings for the city today with the favorable market conditions. Doing those two items, we would save, as of our latest estimates, and that could change, obviously, with the market conditions, up to $400,000. And we could avoid that spike in 17 and 18 and spread that out. One of the items I want to just show the full council that I presented to the Audit Finance Committee is the debt limitation. These are one of the metrics we look at for our GO debt. Our GO debt is limited, has two limits from the Constitution, the Arizona Constitution. One of them is a 20% limit of our net assessed valuation for specific purpose of GO bonds. And you can see they're listed in the slide. The other limit is a 6% of our net assessed valuation for more general purpose bonds, GO bonds. On the bottom left is the table. You can see that calculation. As of our latest net assessed valuation, we have a limitation on the top row. And the bond outstanding we have on the middle. And so if you do the calculation, we're about 46% use of our debt limitation, our statutory limitation. And on the bottom right, you can see how we rank with comparable cities as far as the debt capacity used. So this is one of the metrics we like to look at. And I'll show you another one after our next slide. The next slide we discuss is the utility systems revenue bond type. And here we've identified $93 million of bonds that we would be able to save money with if we refund them. And we've also identified $9 million of bonds that we could pay off. They're coming callable this year in 16, and we have $9 million of restricted impact fund, impact fee revenue that we have and that we would be able to pay those off. So doing those two things would save us, as of our latest estimates, up to, $4 to $4.5 million for the city of Mesa, which is it's a great opportunity for us. Finally, as I talked about, the debt burden is another metric we look at. And so if you combine all of our fixed debt, our long-term fixed debt outstanding, it's about $1.5 billion. If you divide that by our population, you get a debt per capita or a debt per person. And our number is about 3,389 currently. The bar chart on the bottom shows how we rank with comparable cities. And you can see we're the third lowest here with that 3,389 figure. If the council approves the resolution, we would expect to, our estimated timeline, we would expect to have a ratings call at the end of this month We would expect to price the bonds next month and close the bond issuance in April. We're also in the planning stages of our new money issuance, and we would come to council in April with that resolution as well. As you can see on the slide, our current estimates, we have about $38 million of GO bonds we would need to issue, and $90 million of utility revenue systems bonds we would need to issue this year for new money activity. I'd like to turn the time over now to Candace to discuss our funding plan for the debt service.
What we have for the last two slides here is just to kind of review really quickly where the payment sources come from for these particular bonds. This first one is general obligation bonds. There are multiple funding sources for those. The bulk of that is the secondary property tax that is on those bonds, but we also have other items such as our impact fee revenues that we kind of talked about. We have impact fees on police, fire, parks, and storm sewer that help to pay off some of those pre-2008 bonds. We also have core construction fee that was put in place when we built the new court building. That's a fee on that. That would actually go away when that debt is paid off, but that's currently, we still have debt outstanding there. So I just want to show you kind of where some of those funding sources were coming from over the next few years.
And then Mr. Kavanaugh has a question for you.
Just a question on impact fee revenues. It shows it dropping off later years. Is there a reason for that, the impact fee going away?
Yes, the Vice Mayor Kavanaugh, the impact fees due with this new statute with Arizona, the impact fees that we have in place here in the city of Mesa can only be used on existing debt that was eligible. So it had to be issued prior to the statute changing. It also had to be issued for projects that were growth related, so they couldn't have been a replacement, had to be due to the growth. We've done all that analysis, and our impact fees can stay in place until that we have received the amount needed to pay off that debt. So when we're looking at this here, the schedule, this is when we have currently scheduled based on the impact fees coming in, you know, how they're coming in each year. We've estimated our receipts each year, and we believe that this is when those impact fees would actually go away because the debt related to those would be paid off.
Thank you.
The last slide is just an overview of the secondary property tax. Since the secondary property tax levy is relatively new still to the city of Mesa, we did want to give you kind of an overview. And since it is the major contributor to paying off the general obligation bonds, when did it come into being and how did it increase or change over time? So this is just a real kind of summary slide of that particular levy.
With that, we'd like to entertain any questions the council may have.
Thank you. Well, this is all good news. Now, my recollection from last year's budget meetings is that our actual operating budget was, I think, $1.3 billion, but we had budgeted $1.6 in anticipation of hopefully retiring some bonds. Is this what we're seeing now coming back, and is that the money that we budgeted?
Mayor, that is correct, Mayor.
Okay, great. Well, I'm glad that the market is such that we can take advantage of that and do this, so. This is all good news to me. Mr. Richens.
Just wanted to confirm, you know, some of the concern that we always have about debt financing is I'll use the example of a fire truck, and I don't think there's fire trucks in the general obligation bond, but we never want to pay for a fire truck more than a certain number of years, right?
Right.
And so is there any assets that, by refinancing, are we adding a significant amount of term? Are we paying over a longer period of time? Help me.
Mayor, Councilmember Richens, that's one of the rules we don't cross. We don't extend out the life of the existing refunded bonds, so we keep that the same length. We don't extend out the maturity schedule for the bonds that we refund.
But obviously, if you go back to the first slide, the $23 million spike has to be pushed out and spread out over future years. So there is a net cost to extend, but we also don't have $23 million that we can come up with in 1 year. So we're financing that and pushing that again out and further into the future. But at the same time, we're able to refund $20 million of existing debt, and the savings from that refinancing will offset the cost of pushing the $23 million further out into the future. So it's a good timing that allows us to we knew that $23 million was coming. I mean, it's one of the first charts I saw when I became city manager. I was like, what's that? And so we didn't think it was prudent, especially during the challenging times, to stuff away $23 million. But we knew we would have an opportunity to refinance. The good news is we're pushing refinancing that out to the future. There'll be obviously some costs, but we're going to be able to offset it by refinancing other outstanding issuances, and from that savings offset the cost of the $23 million financing.
Okay. Thank you very much. So this is just to hear a presentation and discuss proposed bond refundings. This is not an action item.
Yeah, Mayor, it's on your agenda
for Monday.
For Monday, for
okay,
you to
so this is just an update.
Yeah, just to give you,
Okay. Great. Well, thank you very much. I'll look forward to voting on for that on Monday. Next item is to hear a presentation and provide direction on the Gilbert Road Light Rail extension. Jody, welcome. It's always good news when you're here to get updated on light rail.
I hope this is good news today. All right, let's see. Good morning, Mayor, members of Council. I'm Jody Sorrell, I'm the Transit Services Director, and with me up here I have Eric Guderian, the Deputy Transportation Director, and Trevor Collin, the Engineering Project Manager for Light Rail. It's been a while since we've talked about Light Rail, specifically the Gilbert Road extension, something other than financing. And we've opened Central Mesa, and that project, the ridership continues to grow, so we're really happy with what's happening there. We wanted to give you a quick update on Gilbert Road and get your input on some long-term decisions that we have to make. So the project is in final design and it's moving very quickly. There's been some pre-construction activity out there. You may have noticed some potholing and stuff along the corridor, and that will continue probably through the summer with some other pre-construction work with relocating lights to the from the center to the sidewalks and so forth. The artists for the project have been selected and they're busy at work working with the architects, and we hope to be under construction in about the fall, late fall of this year, with we're still on schedule to open for revenue service in late 2018. One issue that we would like to talk to you about is the end of the line station area at Gilbert Road. When we were building Central Mesa, when we opened the first light rail extension, we were already in the planning efforts for Central Mesa, so we knew where we were going. When we were building Central Mesa, we were already in the planning efforts for Gilbert Road. When we get to the end of the line at the Gilbert Road and Main Street, that's going to be the end of the line for that extension, for that corridor, for decades. We're not going to be building again. So we have some decisions to make for how that intersection functions and how that's going to work for the city to do that. So we have three different scenarios to present to you this morning. The first scenario is what is in the current preliminary engineering plans. It's what's in the budget. What it has is it has a station at Gilbert and Main at the intersection, and then the tail tracks. Valley Metro needs tail tracks in this area for train storage so that if there's an accident or a train, they can quickly restore service. We have the tail tracks in this area. West of the station, it's 400 feet west, and the way they're designed is the trains will be stored on the outside of the tracks, and the trains and revenue service will travel in between them during coming to and from the station. This configuration requires some special track work. It has some additional switches. All the additional switches do create some possibility for error. What that means is like the train could, if they don't function properly, the train may derail. Not that that's a big thing, but that just does slow service a little bit. We have had that happen already on our extension. But it does happen.
Derailment.
It's 400 feet long. The special track work over the long term, because everything is embedded in concrete and the switches, the additional maintenance costs that could acquire for it, that could add additional maintenance costs over the years for us. And we do pay for our light rail O&M out of our general fund. So that's a budget consideration we wanted to put out there. Scenario two came to light during a value engineering workshop with Valley Metro, where they brought in some light rail engineers from three or four, I think, from across the country to look at our project and offer some solutions. This option shifts the station 400 feet from the intersection west. it adds the tail tracks then at the intersection. So the tail tracks would be between Gilbert and Main Street and the station. The tail tracks are being designed because this is a decades-long end of the line. The tail tracks are being designed to hold 2 3-car trains, so to allow for growth. So when it's first built, it might be one train that's out there, 1 2-car train, but over the years it will grow, so we have to plan for that growth. So this would this also has 2 3-car train lengths to store in it. It adds an additional traffic signal to the west end of the station, because we'd have to put in a pedestrian crossing at the west end of the station. It does create some challenges if you're on the bus on Gilbert Road. We've now added walking distance for people to make that rail bus transfer, and a great deal of our ridership is the bus rail connection transfer point.
A quick question.
Yes.
Sure. So in this scenario, to that point, in this scenario, you have a transit center. Why wouldn't you just circulate the Gilbert Road bus into the transit center and drop them off right across the street?
Mayor and Councilman Richards, one of the reasons why is because it adds increased travel time to the route if you're heading north or south. It can add like 3 to 4 or 5 minutes up coming in, making that turn, and traveling through. It also then adds additional cost to our bus budget, because it's a cost per mile that we pay. So when we deviate from the route.
How much is 400 feet?
Over the years it would add up. We pay right now, our cost is about $6.70 per mile. So over the course.
Somebody got a calculator? I want to bust out. Somebody bust out 400 feet for me or 800 feet. I don't know,
it's an option that we can do, and we've talked about that.
So it's 400 feet of walking for rail passengers, or circulate in and circulate out.
We've talked about that over the course. I mean, it does increase our bus costs over the course. It does increase travel time.
Isn't the point of the Gilbert Road line to circulate them into light rail once we get out there? Isn't that kind of the point of it?
We've always done it where they connect straight in at the intersection. As much as possible. Now I should back up. At Sycamore, when it was fully operated, we diverted a lot of routes in off of First Avenue and Dobson, and added a lot of travel time to the passengers. It can be done. It is an option. It's not one we would typically do, but we can do that.
It seems to me that we're trying to get people to ride it, and the making it as convenient as possible to get from a bus to the rail connection would make the most sense to me. But that's just this scenario. So we'll see the rest of the scenarios too. I'm just kind of curious when you said that. And
that certainly is an option. I think the other thing, are you going to talk about the barn?
Well, yeah, we can.
The farm?
Barn.
We call it a barn.
So we're going to buy the farm now?
So, one of the trains are very large. So as they're parked out there, So as they're parked there, and you have the one train or the 2-car train, and as it grows, you have this growing area. We can do some things to make it more aesthetically pleasing and create like a continue the station art to station theme into that, so it extends the station. We'd have to do some safety impacts that would add cost if we wanted to make it more aesthetically joined in with the station. That could add some additional cost of like $500 to $1 million, depending on what we did on that. So that would eat up a chunk of that savings as we did that. But it's just, if we want, as the trains grows, the stations become more less visible from the intersection with the trains parked at east of the station. And then the third option, which is one, is just to do the configuration, extend the tail tracks across Gilbert Road, keep the station at the intersection, and you're still maximizing all of that bus rail transfer connection points. This particular scenario, we would have to reopen the EA because we only took the EA as far as Gilbert Road, so we'd have to do some additional environmental work. There is some additional right-of-way that's needed. we'd have to do, depending on what the environmental showed up, there would have to be some environmental mitigation that could take place. If we took the tail tracks only the 400 feet past the intersection, which is what we were planning to do, it doesn't impact the property owner to the south, their access. They would still maintain all the access that they currently have today. It wouldn't impact people making a left-hand turn from Main Street into their business.
Oh, what's the skin? You do an amendment to the existing EA for that? Mm-hmm. You wouldn't have to do a new environmental assessment for that section. It would just be an amendment filed to the original plan?
Right.
What would be the schedule impact for that?
We can continue on while we do it. It could impact the schedule. It's a risk that we take.
How could it impact
the schedule? It could just delay it possibly a little bit. There's no reason to think what we have today in the EA and how we've done it, that FTA, it wouldn't be approved. It's just an ongoing, it's just a risk that's out there. I can't tell you, if you're asking me like with 3 months, 2 months, we don't know that.
It's a risk. How big a risk? I mean, that's...
On a scale of 1 to 10? 3 or 4.
So not a very big risk. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's helps.
Yes, Mr. Finner.
So in scenario 3, if we decide to take that track and store the trains, does this kind of come, my gut reaction is now this commits us to a direction. And I don't know if we wanted to be committed to that direction. So how does that fit in?
We don't want it to think that way. The challenge is even all the other scenarios are going to commit us to spending dollars that we would eventually have to abandon. We either look at it or try not to look at it as, you know, where we've made the decision to go down Main or turn and go down Gilbert. It's really trying to evaluate, as we were saying, where we came to the conclusion at this point is this transit center, which I'm going to call this is the Mesa Transit Center, is probably going to be configured in this way for the foreseeable future. Because as you know, we're now currently looking at the next phase really is looking at the opportunity to come out of Chandler and then come up for the Fiesta District and tie in there. Well, we can imagine how long, I mean, that's probably going to take time to evaluate. So that commitment, this is really a decision about what we think best, how this functions best for this intersection and as a transit development. I think that's how I'm looking at it. Because I think in 15, 20 years, we would evaluate then, do we want to turn and go south on Gilbert or do we want to keep going on Main? I don't think we're making that. We don't believe we're making that decision today. We don't look at it as that implication. That's why we're trying to just go just the 400 feet, just what we need to get the trains away from the transit center, get it physically on the other side, and then just focus on transit connection and circulation at the intersection.
I know council has several questions. I need to apologize and leave, but so if you don't mind, I'm just going to weigh in before I take off. I met with Jody and went through the various scenarios. The one that stands out to me is this scenario 3 for the following reasons. I don't think it ties us into going further east. Jody, as she explained it to me, we can make that sharp left-hand turn and have the tail tracks go east, and that's okay. There's nothing inconsistent about that. You know, you can head off to Gilbert and Chandler, but the tail tracks, you know, are parked on the other side. I did talk with the gentleman who owns the RV business there, and he expressed some concern. Would that, you know, prohibit him from having left-hand turn business into his property? And this would not. There'd be a dedicated left-hand turn lane that would be in front of the entrance to his business. And so that it wouldn't prevent people from accessing his business that way. And to me, if financially, yes, there's the potential for a slight delay. There's the potential for some additional cost in acquiring property further to the east. But I think that would be project cost, which is wrapped into the whole, you know, it's better for it to be project cost than to be operation and maintenance cost. And if we do what's engineered right now, where we store the trains on the other side of the tracks, we've got a lot of switching stations. Switching stations are potentially costly when it comes out to maintenance costs going forward. So we can eliminate a lot of that potential cost. So, again, I defer to the consensus of the council, but those were the things that I that kind of stood out to me as being considerations. And I think also it allows us to have this the station right front and center at the intersection as opposed to pushing it back one direction or the other. I think it's more aesthetically pleasing and more prominent if it's right there at literally on the corner rather than pushed into the middle of one of the intersections. So thank you for allowing me to voice that. Mr. Vice Mayor, we'll take over.
Mr. Luna?
Jody, my preference is actually scenario three. I think that makes more sense to me. Now, did Phoenix have a similar experience in terms of when they were planning their metro? Did they do something like that and then change direction?
They haven't changed their direction. We just have an opportunity to kind of look at this now with through the value engineering process and kind of evaluate what the long-term functionality is. Phoenix has as a result of Prop 104, Phoenix has a very planned out future light rail program, so they can plan their extensions and their ends of the line for what meets that. We have to Gilbert Road, and now we that as a community, we have to think about where we want to go and what's our next steps. I just want to make sure that everybody understands that scenario three is an additional $1.8 million to the cost for that long term.
Mr. Thompson?
You know, when I first started looking at this, I was amazed that there was actually three scenarios because I looked at it and thought there was only one, being scenario two, because number one, it saves us $2 million. Two, it eliminates any future potential O&M cost. And there's no scheduling impacts. And so I looked at it and said, wow, this is like kind of like the best of option one and option three, with the exception that we're not crossing and committing additional track going to the east, especially since, you know, for decades out, we don't know exactly where we're going, whether we're going Gilbert or going straight out Main Street. So for me, I looked at it and thought option two was probably one of the best fits. I particularly like the fact that the station sits back away from the intersection because that is kind of a congested intersection at times. And having the station sit right up on the intersection, to me, can be a little bit hazardous to the citizens as they're walking and commuting. And so for me, I like the fact that it sits back, and that's my preference.
Mr. Glover?
I would concur with my colleague, Councilmember Thompson. I prefer scenario two just with the anticipated savings, and then it doesn't impact the work schedule as well.
Other comments? Mr. Fincher.
Sure. I think too. Always looking forward to saving the dollars. And it rings in my head, Councilmember Richens, maybe there's an opportunity in improving shade structures, other things, so money better used. But do love the savings, so I'll support number two.
And I have a question. I can't recall in terms of other stations that we have along the whole system. I don't really recall one where we have a station right at a corner of a major intersection. Aren't all the other stations we have somewhat offset or moved back directly from an intersection?
Our Country Club and Alma School stations are directly at the intersection. Center Street, while it's not center, is not equivalent to Gilbert. It's at the intersection. Sycamore is at the intersection, but Sycamore is also not a major thoroughfare.
Right, I was thinking more of the major.
Right, so most of them, as a rule of thumb, Valley Metro tends to put them at the intersections to facilitate that bus rail transfer as much as possible, because not every station has a transit center at the end of it, like we do at Gilbert and we do at Gilbert Road and we do at Sycamore. So we try to facilitate some of that that bus rail transfer, because you do get, as a transit rider, if you're transferring from bus to light rail and the bus comes and you see the train at the station and you know it's getting ready to leave, you have a tendency to want to not wait for your walk signal to cross the intersection to get the train,
because
you don't want to wait another 12 minutes for the next train. So there is an anxiety level that kind of comes with some of the riders on some of that. So that's why they try to place them as close to the intersection as possible.
So, Vice Mayor, and Jody, one thing I think we need to be clear, because we talk about congestion at intersections. I want to be clear. When we have the storage west of the intersection, are we adding another traffic signal?
In scenario one, where we
have two, the one
in
two.
Scenario two, yes, we are adding another traffic signal.
A pedestrian signal?
It's a ped crossing at the west end of the station because we have to allow, we have to create a safety scenario so people aren't jaywalking at the west end
of
that station.
So that does create, I want to be careful, Louie, that does create a lot of traffic.
So yes, so we would have,
we would have three
signals that could potentially be functioning within that span.
Mr. Glover?
Well, I think we're seeing that right now at the LaSuire and Main station at Mesa Drive, just because if there's a red light at the, or a green light or a red light at the pedestrian crossing, then it backs up traffic into Mesa Drive and Mesa Drive and Main Street. So that is something to consider, but I think that this is not, if we were to set it back, it wouldn't be as detrimental as if it is right there, kind of like it is at Mesa Drive.
And I'm kind of sensing from the comments there's probably a majority consensus for scenario number two?
Or I came in here originally liking three. One, because it kind of sets up the thinking about going down going down Main Street, which is what I always kind of envisioned. I would rather see commuter rail come up from the south and through that area to serve those kind of loads. But, you know, hearing the explanations, that was just from what I was looking at last night, but hearing kind of more detail about it, I'm starting to kind of think that maybe scenario two would be fine if you'll circulate the buses in and make it easy for people to get off and over to the train, which is what you just explained they like to do. So, I definitely would be in favor of doing that approach if you can get that bus circulation right in there. But, probably tend towards scenario two after hearing the discussion.
And I do, I think it's also worthwhile to explore the bus circulation issue. Again, just for ease of transit riders, we have people of all abilities who ride our buses and light rail, and we want to make the transition as smooth as possible or minimize barriers for people to do that. So I think it's certainly worth exploring how it would work, what the additional cost would be, but I think it would be user friendly, hopefully, to our riders. So I think that's what it's certainly to look at. So is that enough directions for you?
Yep.
Mr. Luna.
Yeah, I can live with two if we can get those buses in there. My preference is three, but I can live with two.
Okay.
If we can get those buses in there. So.
Okay. Any further comments, discussion? I think we're okay on that. All right. Well, thank you very much. Next item on our agenda is to hear presentation, discuss, and provide direction on redevelopment area creation and central business district expansion.
Good morning, Vice Mayor, members of council. It's good to be here this morning. It's an important project to lay out for you. We've had several people in the Office of Economic Development work on this project, and two of those are here with me today to actually lead us in the presentation. Sarah Sorensen is a project manager in the department, has worked hard in putting us together, and Mr. Jeff Robbins is actually from the Office of Management and Budget and is on special assignment to us for this project in particular. So I'm going to turn it over to them and let them lead the way.
Thank you, Bill. Vice Mayor, Council Members, it's a pleasure to be with you today. Part of the mission of the Office of Economic Development is to enhance Mesa's economy and to create quality jobs. And today we're going to be talking about some of the different tools that can help us achieve those aims. As you can see from the title, one of the tools we are discussing is the Central Business District expansion, which implies we already have a Central Business District, and we do. This is a map of our western portion of the city. The Town Center redevelopment area is bordered in yellow, and the Central Business District is the blue area. Let's zoom in and take a closer look at the borders here. To the west, the area is generally bounded by Vineyard Road, which is just a little bit beyond Country Club to the west. On the north, it's bounded by 6th Street. To the east, Hobson, and to the south, Crescent, which is just a little bit below Broadway. You may have also noticed that the Central Business District does not fill in all of the portions of the Town Center redevelopment area. On the western edge, there's a small area where the Town Center redevelopment area juts out to extension. And then in the top right corner, there's a very small area bordered by Le Sueur, and 4th that is also not covered by the Central Business District.
So now that we've refreshed your memory on the existing boundaries, let's dive a little deeper into what those areas actually mean. So a redevelopment area is an area designated by City Council to be in need of revitalization. Now, before City Council can declare an area a redevelopment area, we must determine that that area meets the statutory requirements. In general, an area needs to exhibit a predominant need of revitalization and that redevelopment is necessary in order to improve public health. Now, once an area is designated a redevelopment area, or RDA, the City Council or the city would begin working on a redevelopment plan. The redevelopment plan is essentially the blueprint or the framework of how the city will proceed in our redevelopment efforts. Now, it's important that we go through this process of formally declaring an area a redevelopment area because it allows the city and private developers to target federal, state, and local funds to that specific area. This is not a new concept for Mesa, as you saw on the previous slides. The Town Center RDA was actually established in the late 1970s, and it is still active today. Over the years, we've modified this plan several times, and the main focus of the plan is to generate uses that'll stimulate growth. The redevelopment of the One McDonald Building is just one example of a redevelopment project under the Town Center Redevelopment Plan. This project also qualified for the 8-year abatement of the government property lease excise tax from 2005 to 2013. We will describe that further in a few slides. Now, Central Business District is a single and contiguous area that exists entirely within an RDA. There is a cap on the total size of a Central Business District. For Mesa, it can't exceed 5% of our total land mass. We're about 138 square miles, so our Central Business District cannot exceed about 7 square miles. The current Central Business District in Mesa is about 2 square miles, and the proposed expansion would be about 1 square mile, bringing our new utilization rate to a little under 3 square miles. So we're still comfortably within our limits of 7 square miles. Now, when you have both an RDA and a CBD in the same area, it allows the city to offer the maximum benefit of the government property lease excise tax, or GPLET. A CBD really holds no other benefit besides the entitlement of the 8-year abatement. Now, a GPLET is a method by which the city leases city-owned property to a private party for use. This arrangement reduces a project's operating costs because we're replacing the property tax with an excise tax. The excise tax is determined based on the type of use and the amount of square footage. So think of it like a payment in lieu of taxes. Now, while a standard GPLET within an RDA replaces the property tax with an excise tax, we can maximize that incentive even further if the GPLET is not only in a redevelopment area, but also in a central business district. Having a GPLET in both of those areas allows us to offer the full 8-year abatement of the excise tax. We think this benefit will be truly beneficial in our redevelopment efforts. And with that being said, I'd like to invite our city attorney, Jim Smith, to weigh in on the business implications of having a redevelopment area and a CBD.
So, Vice Mayor and Council, let me also sort of explain to me, the GPLET statute is a confusing statute. And so I'd like to think of it as generally, that government property is not subject to property tax, and so the GPLET really is an in-lieu type of tax, an excise tax that's in place in lieu of it. And then what the statute then does is it creates a process in which, if you meet certain criteria, if you the RDA and Central Business District, you can get an 8-year abatement, basically placing you back into the position of taking away that in-lieu tax. It's only for 8 years. It's subject to a number of limitations. There's sort of requirements that steps you have to take to put it into place, and that's what Economic Development Department's working on right now, to be able to at least be able to afford this economic tool in certain circumstances.
Thank you, Jim. Next slide, please. So as you can see, the development or the redevelopment area creation and the central business district expansion work hand in hand, and both areas need to exist in order for us to be able to offer this additional tool of the 8-year abatement. We believe this tool will allow...
Ms. Richens, a question?
May I ask a question? So we've had the opportunity to use GPLET in downtown for how long?
Since approximately 1978, when the City Council approved the redevelopment area and the Central Business District.
And how many times have we used it in downtown?
We have used it once with the One McDonald.
So one time in 30 years we've used this tool? Okay.
Right, I think a number of times throughout the years we've offered it, and we've had potential developments or agreements with developers to use that as part of the tools, but for a whole variety of reasons those projects didn't go ahead. But I know that it is something that developers ask about. It's something the city has offered to use over the course of time.
Correct.
Mr. Thompson.
I have a question also related to, you stole my question. But with the expansion, and not that I'm opposed to this at all by any means, but with this expansion, is there property that we own in the Fiesta District that we would be able to utilize GPLETs on?
So the way it works, Councilor, Vice Mayor, Councilor Thompson, the way it works is, so we did this with Crescent Crown. That's, I guess, the best example. And so there's actually... Well, I'll let Jim talk about it, but it's a transfer to the city for $1 for the property. And so it becomes, the underlying interest becomes government property for that period of the abatement. And at the end, it goes back onto the tax rolls. So it doesn't necessarily have to start off with city-owned property. There's a transfer that takes place that legally puts that or puts that into under the government's, a government property category so they can enjoy the excise tax benefit.
So there's, Vice Mayor, and I'll add to that. So there's sort of what I'll call the traditional sort of development or redevelopment GPLET deal, and then there's sort of the scope of the statute and how it applies to many other type of deals that many people never think of. The traditional sort of redevelopment or development GPLET is the developer owns the property. They transfer the property for a nominal amount to the city. They build the improvements, the city leases it back for that period, for the abatement period, and then it's ultimately transferred back to the developer. And that is what happened with One McDonald, and the property ultimately was transferred back. Now, there's many other types of, you know, the GPLET, the actual statute, though, is much broader than that. So it, and it has a number of exceptions, and, you know, I'll just give you one for an example, is it includes the property that the city owns around Falcon Field, and so we lease improvements there, and it's city-owned property, it's a city improvement, and it's a lease, so that's a GPLET. But there's an exception to the GPLET for all leases that are involved with airports. And so if you fall within, and then you're taken immediately back out of the GPLET statute. So you know, so there's other types of leases that fall within it. But when you're normally talking about it within the context of the economic development arena, you're usually looking at it in the One McDonald type of scenario, and where the developer transfers the property for a period of time, it's a lease back scenario and then a transfer back.
So in the Fiesta District, as you can tell, what we're headed towards is the Fiesta District. And there are significant large properties there, and property owners who have expressed strong interest in having this tool available to them. And so that's part of the effort of why we're moving in this direction, to help in that revitalization. And because it really, you kind of have to have a certain mass and value for this to kind of make sense too, from the way the mechanism works. And so that's part of the attempt. And, it, you know, I don't think it applies to residential, or does it apply for residential?
I'm not aware of it's ever been.
Yeah, so mostly this would be commercial office space type development that we'd be looking at.
Ms. Richens.
So you said Crescent Crown used a GPLET.
Yes.
Yeah, so. Because Crescent Crown is neither in an RDA or a central business district. Did that mean they don't qualify for the 8-year abatement and they're just on
right.
the just
correct.
This is just a smaller increment. What's the number there? What's the difference between getting the 8-year abatement and then having the conventional, what is it, 30-year?
So the tax structure is very complex. I actually brought the chart in case you want to see it, and it was made
and
more.
You know that I do.
And it was made more complex in 2010. There used to be a greater differential, a bigger delta between the standard property tax and the in-lieu GPLET tax. That was shrunk in 2010. By the state legislature. And so now the difference is much smaller. If you're within a redevelopment area, there is a benefit. But there's even a benefit just to be in a redevelopment area. And then if you're in a redevelopment and central business district and you qualify for the 8-year abatement, that's sort of the largest enhancement. So there is still a small differential, but it depends on a lot of things because the in-lieu tax is based off of used square footage and on certain uses, how many stories the building is. And so you have to figure the calculation under the GPLET, then figure out the traditional property tax, and then you have to figure out what that difference is. And the state legislature made that difference smaller in 2010.
So how advantageous is the 8-year abatement really? If you're going through the exercise to declare an RDA central business district, how much does that 8-year abatement really get you?
Again, that's a problem.
Yeah, I know.
The scenario. I'll tell you that I think they were getting ready to go there.
Yeah.
When you look at a lot of the developments that have happened in Tempe and downtown Phoenix, this is the primary tool. Well, let me say this. This is about the only tool the state of Arizona allows for us to use. And so it gives us maybe not something of significance, but it gives us something. And it's what we see our peers using to bring in large developments into their downtown area. Both Tempe and Phoenix are probably the best examples, I would say, in the Valley and utilizing this tool.
And I understand that Arizona is the only state that doesn't have the tax increment financing tool, which our competitor states use to great advantage in reminding them that Arizona doesn't have it. And so GPLAT is one of the very few things that we have, am I right?
Yeah, that is correct. Very few.
So Councilmember Richens, you were leading right in as a perfect segue. And I'd like to talk a little bit about what Tempe has done.
He read the script.
And previously, what is now the Hayden Ferry Lakeside Building, this used to be a property that generated almost no tax revenue for the city. In 2002, they put a GPLET with an 8-year abatement on this property, and that saved the property owner about $6.3 million, which they were then able to reinvest into their property, into their business to grow it. In 2010, the assessed full cash value was $78.9 million. That generates about $1 million in total tax revenue. And the city of Tempe, because it's only one of the taxing jurisdictions, takes in about $140,000 of that. Another great example comes to us.
Mr. Richens, what year did Tempe Town Lake open there? The thing because Tempe Town Lake came in and then there was, they focused that. It used to be parking lots for I remember people running through that as a field and throwing the goalposts into the Salt River. You know, what year, I'm trying to remember what year the actual, I wasn't part of that.
Probably.
So, is it 98 or 99 that the Tempe Town Lake can? What I'm trying to get is the nexus between the public side investment in the lake and what?
It was built in 97.
It was built in 97, thank you, Google. That was all you. Sorry, Gary Google. Yeah. I'm just trying to get the nexus between the public side investment because there's a corollary for the Fiesta District in some of the streetscape improvements that we're doing there.
There's a combination of all those things, right?
Yeah.
A variety of things.
I understand context. Okay, thank you.
Yep.
So another great example is the Camden Copper Square residential building at Van Buren and 7th Street in Phoenix. This was originally a mix of light development and vacant land. And in 2001, they did the same thing that Tempe did, a GPLET with an 8-year abatement. At that time, all those properties' assessed value was below $700,000. In 2015, the assessed value is $33 million. And they get the benefit of bringing in a aesthetically pleasing high-quality residential development to downtown Phoenix.
So as you can see, the redevelopment area creation and the central business district expansion work hand in hand, and both areas do need to exist in order for us to be able to offer the full 8-year abatement of the GPLET. We think this tool will allow the city to be more competitive as we work towards attracting new businesses and promoting business expansion.
All right, so we've talked about the tools and we've talked about how other cities are using them. Let's talk about where we imagine this redevelopment area going. This is the original map you saw at the beginning, and we've overlaid a star on the Fiesta District. This is another map that actually shows the proposed boundaries in red, that outlined red area, of where we would like the RDA and the Central Business District to extend to. So let's zoom in, take a closer look at what this area actually looks like. So once again, existing in yellow, proposed in red. And the Office of Economic Development drew up these boundaries, and we did it using two primary guiding principles. One, we wanted to avoid single-family residential. And the reason for that is there's really no benefit to single-family residential. So if you're wondering why are the borders kind of jagged, it's because of that. The second guiding principle was that along Country Club, we only wanted to include the properties that were directly abutting Country Club. And then, of course, we extend west into the Fiesta District. It probably goes without saying, but this is one of the most important redevelopment opportunities in West Mesa. We're bordering down that long arm that goes west. That's the Banner Medical Center. Then there's Mesa Community College. And it's interesting, this area on Fiesta District also borders the portion of the US 60 with the highest daily traffic densities. So all of those factors make this area very desirable for redevelopers. And we've recognized that as well as a city. We've invested millions of dollars in infrastructure into this area. And because of that, we believe that more opportunity is coming. And when it comes, we want Mesa's deal maker to be able to land the deal. So here's a few locations along Country Club on our Google Maps tour here. And as you can see, there are a number of properties that could benefit from redevelopment. The two in the bottom there are abandoned and some other just brownfield. These properties aren't as large as those in the Fiesta District, but there are some in the future that may benefit from having that GPLAT as an option. And then of course, the Fiesta District, this is the goal. The first property we want to talk about is the Grace property at Southern and Alma School. This has been an eyesore for years. The second is the Three Fountains Plaza at 1350 South Longmore. This is just west of the Fiesta Mall. And it's a 43,000 square foot site that's roughly 95% vacant. And it features a huge parking field with lush, mature vegetation. The third is a prime opportunity for redevelopment. This is the Mesa Fiesta Center. It's a 200,000 square foot mixed use site, and it's located just northeast of the intersection of Alma School and the 60. So it's a prime location. And last is the West Southern Avenue Shopping Center at 706 West Southern.
Now, the process for creating a redevelopment area and expanding our central business district begins with public outreach. Before we can accept the proposed area, we must verify that the area meets all of the criteria in the state statute. And throughout this process, we are continuously engaged with the public through various open meetings, even conference calls if needed. Once the City Council designates an area an RDA and a CBD, there is a mandatory 1-year waiting period before we can begin offering the GPLET.
Is that by state law?
It is, yes, sir. Now, during this 1-year waiting period, that's when we would begin crafting our formal redevelopment plan. The plan will highlight our redevelopment efforts and identify potential funding sources when we're ready to begin projects. Now, this is a lengthy and complex project, and we are requesting the assistance of a consultant who specializes in this type of work. Now, this is a hypothetical timeline that illustrates the process I just described. With the assistance of a consultant, we anticipate the public outreach and finding of necessity portion to take approximately 2 months. If we were to begin next month in March, we would hope to be back in front of council in May. At that council meeting, we would request that you pass a resolution creating the redevelopment area. Now, at the same meeting, we can also pass a resolution extending the Central Business District. That action is what triggers the one-year waiting period. During this one-year waiting period, the city would work with the consultant to craft the redevelopment plan. And with that being said, we anticipate this being at least a 14-month process. And we are hopeful that we can begin offering the GPLETs in June of 2017.
Mr. Fincher? Well, it sounds like a wonderful tool you want to add to the economic development toolbox. And although we've seldom used it up to this point, we want to make sure you have everything, I would think, at least I would. Why don't we do this on a corresponding or concurrent effort along light rail on Main Street from Gilbert all the way in? Is there some limiting factor that, you know, in the back of my head, I was saying, why don't we do this from Gilbert to the west boundaries all across the city? And so maybe there's something I'm missing there.
So I think that's a great idea. I think the objective right now is let's get this phase started. Let's get the process moved along. It's going to take a little bit of an effort with all data gathering, and I think our 2 months is an aggressive number, but we're trying to push as hard as we can. And I think the next phase would be look both east and west from the town center and be able to look at light rail and that whole corridor. What are the boundaries? What are some of the objectives now of council, and the Broadway corridor in particular comes to mind? So I think that's the next phase, but first we want to focus on Fiesta, get that process started, and then we can implement it.
Vice Mayor, Councilor Fender, we would support that idea, and maybe we could, when we come back in May with the first report, maybe that would be good direction council could give us to think about, because we think the light rail corridor is a perfect example of both ways, you know, between, from the edge of the city going to Gilbert Road may be the opportunity to look at that. So. But we'd be glad to start that initiative. We would have to go through starting a process with that and getting consultants and stuff. But this is one where we had some interested parties down in Fiesta that were really asking us about it specifically. So we kind of warranted our attention because, as you know, we have a specific some developers down there that are asking and promoting it. So it kind of created this, I guess, interest and incentive for us to do that. But I think we would support, I mean, it makes sense that we would look along the light rail. If you'll give us time, maybe we can come back with the first report. We could discuss that opportunity along light rail also.
Now we had Mr. Thompson and then Mr. Richens.
You know, I love this idea. I think it's a great tool to put in our toolbox. And I know that Vice Mayor has done a lot in the Fiesta District over the years to rejuvenate the area and revitalize the area. I know that Phoenix did something similar, RDA-type expansion, a few years back. But one of the things that they required in their RDA was that they would have to employ a certain percentage of their employees had to be from their city. And I was wondering, is there a way that we can utilize whatever Phoenix utilized so that we kind of hold the developers' feet to the fire and say, you know, we'll do this, but you also need to ensure that you're hiring citizens from Mesa.
So, Mayor, Councilman Thompson, we do that today within the few incentives we have. But certainly when we come back with development agreements for these projects, and maybe when we come back, because one of the, I think, steps is creating the redevelopment policies. That's what we called it.
The actual plan itself.
So maybe we could address that in that plan.
Correct.
Specifically, what you're mentioning. Is that, would that help? Okay.
Ms. Richens?
I was reading one of your economic development newsletters recently, and it touted the amount of investment that's happening in the Fiesta District. You have a center that's been recently remodeled on the east side of Southern and Elm School, new apartment construction going on in there. How many new jobs and total investment has been created in that district in the last couple of years?
I don't think I have that number at the top of my head, but just in November.
You're our economic development director. You certainly should, Mr. Jim Ginia.
I would agree I should have that number in my head.
Is it 2,000? Is it 1,000? How close
can
we
get? Well, just last November when we announced within 48 hours was about 1,500 jobs, if I remember, 970 and approximately 500. So those are just in two projects.
How many do we anticipate coming in addition to that already?
Well, there's a lot of opportunity, in particular, looking at the Fiesta Mall. That's a big opportunity, and I think those numbers alone are staggering. But there are other sites within the Fiesta that, I can go around and add those up. But
aren't there two proposed projects within the Fiesta Mall area in the big box street? The old, Macy's buildings have been acquired, and there's projects that are underway there, as I recall.
There's improvements that have been taking place. We don't have a specific tenant.
Okay, so
there's been the acquisition of some of the big boxes that you mentioned, Macy's specifically, and others. I think they're acquiring others, but we do not. And there was some demolition interior to Macy's to prep it, but I'm not aware of a specific tenant that's wanting to come in there. So,
does this tool help the specific tenant?
It could help all of the property owners in that area. I think one of the things that it does help us too, to be frank with it, it's now that we're this close and we are starting to see that the opportunities, when someone has to make a choice between Tempe or Phoenix, and we can't compete without having this tool, and so at least allows us to have it on the the toolbox to say, yeah, we can do what they can do here. Otherwise, our incentives for development and what we've done in some of those 1,500 jobs is what we've literally had to agree to, is what not only the infrastructure, but a payment for job Mesa jobs or a Mesa resident.
Sure, the job training job, yeah. Stuff, yeah.
And that's, we have kind of a limited dollars to do that.
And you likely know what I'm getting at here. I mean, I think that the Fiesta District is well positioned. It's on a major freeway. It's in a great location. The 202-101 60 corridor is really hot right now for office development. I'm just wondering if we're giving away money when we don't need to. And I think I agree with Councilmember Finter that if we're going to focus on an area, that it would be better served to focus it on Main Street Light Rail Corridor now as the first project instead of the Fiesta District. Because the Fiesta District is moving. We need to be a little patient and let it continue to develop. I think it's making great progress, and it's going to continue to make great progress. And if I'm going to spend a bunch of time doing a redevelopment area, that also aligns with our CDBG focus area along Main Street. So adding this tool to that tool, now you have a whole suite of tools and a huge investment through a transportation system. I just don't think Fiesta District is the place we either need it or is the right place to start it. I would much rather think that we would go down that Main Street corridor rather than this area in particular. And, and we're starting to make some progress in downtown, and we're going to repeat the cycle that we did in the late 1970s when we killed downtown with Fiesta Mall. Now we're going to kill downtown again with a whole other set of tools down here that will end up likely getting used down here and not in our downtown, as is evidenced with 30 years of experience in our downtown. So if we haven't been able to get it right in our downtown, I'm not sure that we should be going down the road and applying it here.
Ms. Luna?
I have a question about the redevelopment of the Grace property. Now, did this trigger the notion of trying to acquire this giblet process? I mean, if we don't have that in our toolbox, is that going to jeopardize any potential redevelopment in that area?
I think it adds to the toolbox, just like we've been saying. Mm-hmm. It adds to the toolbox because the developers are still hesitating. This allows them to get them over the edge. This is a savings for them. When the legislature changed the law back in 2010, it weakened it somewhat. But again, it's one of the few tools that are available. But as we talked to a developer just last week, he's very much interested in this particular tool to help him in his revitalization efforts. We've had some success, but certainly with the Grace property, I would think it's another quiver that we have to make things happen. But certainly the Fiesta Mall developer and several of the others we've talked to have expressed interest in this, in the Fiesta area specifically.
Mr. Glover.
I know in discussing this with Bill, I kind of concur with Councilmember Richens, just because in some of the areas, especially in my district, the Broadway corridor should... we should utilize that just to try to revitalize that area. And I know that I've talked about doing a streetscape, and that's something that the city can do as well. But I'm like, I'd like to see where we can expand this, where it'd be most beneficial for especially West Mesa and in the areas that definitely do need that TLC.
I certainly at least concur, and I've expressed that my interest and opinion that this should expand to cover along the light rail line and along the Broadway corridor, again, because I see the value of the tool. I will tell you, though, colleagues, that every developer that talks to me about projects in Fiesta Mall or Fiesta District, the first question they ask, well, do you do what Tempe and Phoenix do? Because we want a G-plat. And I'm going, oh, no, we don't. Not there. At least in terms of the maximum benefit that is available. And so that is, it's a very standard question. We have development there where we do have specific requests to have this available. I think it's worthwhile to pursue the study that we're talking about, but I also agree completely with what you say in terms of having the tool available along the light rail line and also on the Broadway corridor, because it's very useful in terms of economic development for all three areas, which I think would benefit by having it.
Ms. Richards? And we do have the GPLET available. We just don't have the eight-year abatement available without this designation. So we have the tool. We've proven that we can use it quite effectively, in fact. You know, so that would be my preference is, yeah, here's the tool. Of course, developers, the first question they're going to ask is, where's my free money to come to your town? You know, we've got a great location in Fiesta, and we've spent a significant amount of the public's money in sprucing it up, and I hope that continues. I think we need to continue to look at good investment there and traffic circulation and transportation issues and all of those things. We need to reinvest in that kind of infrastructure, and I think that is better money spent than giving money away back to a developer, because I think they're going to come anyway. And you know, if we're going to spend the consultant money and all that doing a new RDA and expansion of the Central Business District, this would not be the area that I would choose.
And I guess I would at least note that on the Fiesta Mall itself, in Macy's building, the developer there, that's $21 million project that he's spending, investing into that, and he wants to be able to have the best tools available to him to attract tenants. That's going to be a Class A office building. That building alone is going to have perhaps even as many as 1,000 jobs. Yeah. And he's also acquired the Dixon Best Buy building as well, and is in discussion with the rest of the property. And that is a project that again, we're dealing with a very experienced developer who is sinking significant amount of private funds into the area. He very much acknowledges and appreciates what we've done in terms of infrastructure in the area, but he's again saying there are choices where companies can go and, you know, help me present the strongest package for people to come. And so, again, I would hope that we would give direction to proceed with the study. But again, I also agree that expansion of the area is critical as well. Mr. Fincher?
And just to follow up, a little bit I would add is I don't see this as an either or. I'm hearing from city manager that, well, this is labor intensive. This is a 14-month cycle. Logic would dictate to me that with the opening of the new segment of the light rail, we'll be along those same timelines, that we should be doing that, at least doing that at the same time, so they somewhat coincide to the new section opening, the ability of others. And if you're telling me, hey, it's hard, it's labor intensive and that, I would say, hey, I guess cost-benefit analysis, has this tool really been used? It sounds like you have some in Fiesta District. Great, I understand. 14 months from now, when I'm watching this on TV at home, I'll kind of say, well, at least 14 months ago, we gave them the tools necessary, and there's going to be a great win out of this. So I would, the only pushback I would do is, I think we want it, and we want it all, and we want you to make sure that 14 months from now that additional tool's there.
So, Vice Mayor, Councilman Fincher, thank you for that. So, would the council be open to the idea that maybe what we do, instead of trying to maybe bundle all these together, move forward with this project, then come back to council shortly, and I'm thinking maybe it's two different projects. It's coming, taking light rail down to Broadway, going west to the borders, and then taking another project, creating another initiative, and going east to Gilbert Road with that main corridor.
University Broadway.
Okay. So, and then we'll, you heard I think we'll still be okay as far as the there's a limit on this
square miles.
We just need to look at that.
I think you have
we're like at four. I think we should be okay. Anyway, we'll go look at it. Let's just go look at it. And the other sensitivity we have, though, as you know, is how we drew these lines, is that whole issue of how much residential you include in these districts. So we have to be careful with that. But let's go make an attempt to create two other initiatives, whatever you want to call it, expanding the zones east and west of downtown along light rail.
Mr. Lennon?
I'm wondering if you might want to prioritize which would be first, or are you going to do it as a whole? So when we look at the downtown area, the corridor, which is going to be first?
Yeah, well, so we've obviously we spent some time on this one, and then the thought would be let's start teeing up the other ones and getting a consultant, and I think you get a multiple consultants on each one and start on a timeline. I don't know. I'm not sure what I'm hearing from council. I'm hearing kind of different. Do we go east or west from downtown? Is that the first, or how do we do it? I mean, the goal is, I understand, is to get them all done.
Right.
But let us go back and think about that. Maybe come back and give a plan about how we could try to. I think the goal is try to get them all accomplished as soon as possible. Right. We just need to kind of figure out the effort it takes to have three of them going on at the same time. So
is that okay if the manager comes back with another proposal?
Yeah, and this isn't a philosophical opposition to this approach and using these tools. What it is it's just prioritizing. We have limited resources. We have certain focus areas. And the thing I like about the light rail corridor is we already have our federal funds focused in that location. And I just honestly believe we don't need it in the FESTA district. Use the conventional tools that you have there already. And I don't think you need the eight-year abatement tool. Just use what GPLET tools are available. And I wouldn't go down the FESTA district at all, but my colleagues.
That's the part I need clarification on, that direction from the council is, are we just doing light rail, or are we trying to accomplish all three?
Ms. Pinter.
Let's do it all. Let's go. But I understand the argument there. This doesn't seem like a limited resource, maybe some how many total square miles, but
right.
Priority, I would do them concurrently, if as close as you could. Okay. And I think it still meets everybody's needs. We're not giving something, well, anyway,
I agree with you.
I'm looking at heads nodding, so I won't get in trouble 2 weeks from now when someone says, wait a minute, that's not what I heard. So.
Are we allowed to vote? Is there
no, just giving direction. The direction is let me come back with an idea of how we can try to accomplish all three. That's what I'm hearing.
Is that fair?
Well, that's what I'm seeing, I guess. Okay. We'll work on that then. Okay. Thanks.
I mean, at least come back with. What are the benefits of each of the areas? Because you may hit up. I mean, they did some really great calculations. That 4 square mile area we have left, we might need to make some trade offs.
Right, and we have to look at the nature and characteristic of the residential too. That's going to be a sticker.
Right,
too,
right.
Okay. So let's go. We'll come back with some maps like this, going east and west from downtown.
Okay,
great. Okay. Any additional questions? Thank you very much. Nice presentation. Next item on our agenda is pertaining to our job order contracts, and Mr. Clover has a question.
Yeah, in the project list, there's only 3, but on the map, there's 4. And so I'm kind of curious to what the Mesa Musical Shadows at the Mesa Arts Center is. It just was. Oh, sorry. I just didn't get around to sending an email, so I said I'll ask on Thursday. But Beth, Cindy, always wonderful to see you.
Good morning, Vice Mayor, Council, City Manager. I'm Cindy Ornstein, Director of Arts and Culture and Executive Director of the Mesa Arts Center, for those at home. Musical Shadows is unfamiliar to you only because we didn't have the name decided, but this is the Art Place project that you've been hearing about for a very long time, and it's finally reaching culmination. And I believe that we were in haste trying to get this on here to meet our deadline for the opening of Musical Shadows. Musical Shadows is the interactive artwork that is primarily being funded by the Art Place grant we received, to the $300,000 from Art Place America. It will be an interactive artwork in the North Plaza. It will be a pattern of tiles that is part of the plaza, so flush with it, but it has sensors and speakers embedded in it, and when you walk over it or play with it using your body, or a group of people do, they make music. And the music changes morning, midday, evening, and night to fit the time of day and the length of the shadows. So it will be a very exciting interactive element that I think will bring people to play a lot of the time out there. We're really excited. We've just heard the sound scores, and they're really, really fun and interesting. And so this contract is for Talus to do the cement work, site prep, and the artist will be then applying the artwork into that excavation and cement overlay and fixing the tiles on top of the technology.
And what is the timeline?
We have to have this open by April 2nd.
Yeah, the opening is April 2nd, and the reason that there's all the pieces that are part of the artist contract, all of that has been fabricated. We're in good shape, but this particular contract that requires the cement work is very pressing. We want to actually break ground the Monday after the gala for street pianos, so January 29th is when we're hoping to break ground. And the installation itself will, the plan is to have the installation complete actually by March 17th, so the public can actually be part of the testing of the project during the Spark Festival. They had
so,
the opportunity.
People will be doing what, St. Patrick's Day songs?
Well, on March 18th and 19th, they will hopefully be able, if all goes according to plan, to help us with the final tweaking of the programming during Spark, which would be very fitting because just to remind you, the community was very involved in planning this, coming up with the concept, even coming up with the idea of some of the kinds of musical sounds they'd like to hear, and they got to test a prototype of it last year at Spark, so it will be really fun if they're able to participate in the final testing. But the grand opening is scheduled for April 2nd, and that's very important because 3 days later, we host a party for the National Art Place Grantees Summit that will be held in Phoenix this year. And we are holding the big event at our campus. And so we really think it's important to be able to feature the project they paid for.
So. Any other questions on this project, Mr. Thompson?
My question really wasn't on the project, but my question was more along the lines of my colleague, Councilmember Glover, in that, you know, there's been times when I go through the agenda and I look at the attachments or I look at an item and it either doesn't show the cost or it doesn't have a description. So in my effort to make sure that we're being transparent, I had the exact same question. I looked at it and I was like, wait a minute, here's a line item or here's a map with four projects, but here's the list and it only has three projects. There's zero description, there's zero cost. And so I asked the exact same question, got the answer that I wanted and was told that was utilized grant dollars to get this funded, which is great, but it'd be nice to put that amount on there. So that was my only recommendation is to make sure that you don't leave any empty spaces where there's a description or a dollar amount that's supposed to be. Because I know that everything's funded. It's either funded through a bond or through general fund or enterprise fund or grant dollars. And so just so that we're being transparent, and you know, because it does catch my eye when I see an empty space there where there's something that's supposed to be. It makes me go, what's going on?
So I do apologize for that, Vice Mayor, Councilmember Thompson. We needed to get this one on. We put it on Tuesday. And we sent the spreadsheets up to go into Legistar. I'm not quite sure why they're not in right now. I'll have to go back and check on that. But the spreadsheets did go up on Tuesday. We got the proposal from the contractor Tuesday morning and met, negotiated, and got it on because of this schedule that needed to be met. So we were rushing. I do apologize if it didn't make it on there. The amount is for $250,000 on the award. We do expect that the construction contract will be under $200,000. There's a lot of detailed, intricate work. It is in the shadow walk between the middle two banner poles, if you remember the four banner poles out front. And it's about 1,000 square feet of that tile, and which is sitting on concrete. We have to put the control cabinets in the MAC, so it's a lot of intricate work to get through the floor of the MAC, bore out there, and remove and replace the tile that exists. So we don't have much time to do that, and we're going to be working like mad, and I do apologize. I'm sorry.
Sounds like a good project. As one of the funders in a very small way, I enjoy that it's actually coming online while I'm still around to see it. So appreciate that. Any other questions on job order contracts? Otherwise, thank you all very much. And next item is your reports on meetings or conferences attended. Mr. Luna.
I want to invite everyone to attend my event this Saturday. It's Heart Your Health event over at the Multi-Generation Center. It's a great way to get free exercise. Anyone attending from 8 to 12 can attend many of our classes, and we have a free breakfast. And you can watch Mr. Brady do Zumba.
No.
So just for that reason, you need to come. Again, it's at the Multi-Generation Center, Saturday, from 8 to noon.
Anything else? Other events?
Those videos are still on YouTube.
I know yesterday many of us attended the renaming of Sixth Place to Athletics Way earlier this week. And I think it was very well received in the community. So I got a lot of media publicity on it. And I think it enhances an already very good partnership with Oakland Athletics. Anything else? Mr. Brady?
Thank you, Vice Mayor. We'll see you. Our next council meeting will be Monday, February 22nd. Thank you.
All right. No further business. We'll declare the meeting adjourned.